This morning, I want to continue with our studies of the commandments. I'm not doing an in-depth study, as you probably will have noticed, but I want us to go through the Ten Commandments in broad outline, because they are the commandments of God. They're not options. They're not something that we may take or leave. It comes to us with the highest authority. As I said at the beginning, God wrote them with his own finger on the tables of stone. And they are written for our well-being and the well-being of society. Now we come this morning to the fifth commandment, found there in Exodus 20. And the verse 12, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Now, this is the first of the commandments that actually deal with relationships between fellow human beings. The first four were Godward. Though we could say, of course, the fourth commandment in keeping the Sabbath day holy does have inter-man relationships, in that employers might require employees to work on the Lord's day. But apart from that, those four commandments of Godward, this is the first one to do with human relationships, manward if you like. And I think it is significant that the commandment begins with the family. This is something, of course, we need to especially pay attention to in these days, when the family in the West, at any rate, and certainly in this country, is under attack as it never has been before, with nearly half of couples not bothering to get married, and now the specter of sodomite marriage looming very large. I've told you before of Stonewall, the sodomite organization's slogan, 2, 4, 6, 8, smash the family, smash the state. And as I have so often said, if you do smash the family, you will, in the process of time, smash the state. The family is that basic microcosm of government in society. Marriage was ordained of God right there at creation, in that the woman was specially created for the man to be a helpmeet to him and for him. And as I remarked to somebody the other day, God was the first one to give away the bride. For it tells us, after that he had made Eve, he brought her to Adam. And, of course, then it says, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife. They twain shall be one flesh. What God hath therefore gathered together, joined together, let not man put asunder. Joe's man has been put into the sundry through divorce for years. Now, men and women increasingly can't be bothered to get married. And then the push for sodomite marriages is putting asunder that which God ordained. Marriage was not only for the mutual comfort of the man and the woman, but it was to procreate children. And in this commandment, it is to do with the relationship between children and parents. It is addressed to children, certainly, well, to the offspring, because it doesn't stop here with when children cease to be children and grow up. It is that we should honor our father and mother for as long as they live. Obviously, as people grow up into maturity, the relationship will be somewhat different as to when we're children. But nevertheless, we should honor our father and mother as long as they live. First, obey them when we're children and under their authority. Thereafter, love and cherish them and respect them and look after them as much as we possibly can when they reach old age. There does come a stage when parents may get so ill that it is quite impossible to look after them in a home environment, and it's necessary they go into a nursing home, for they may require round-the-clock nursing or medical expertise that couldn't possibly be given to them in the home situation. Nevertheless, children, offspring, should honor their father and their mother, for that is what the commandment clearly tells us to do. So it is significant that this, the first commandment dealing with interpersonal relationships, begins with the family. This is the stress placed upon the family, the importance by the Bible, not only here in Exodus, but when we turn to Ephesians, verse 5 and 6, we find that Paul, when dealing with relationships with people, in Ephesians 5, he starts off with the husband-wife relationships. Then, in chapter 6, he goes on to the children-parent relationships. And surely again, this tells us the great importance that God places upon the family. He it is who has ordained it. It is the best way to bring up children, even the ungodly. Many of them, at any rate, acknowledge that. And in this country, survey after survey has pointed out, and through investigation and so on, found indeed that children brought up in a normal, stable family relationship background are the most secure, better behaved, less likely to get into crime, do better at in education and in the workplace. And we know, of course, that as the family has been disintegrating in this country and other countries in the Western world, so lawlessness has increased. That there are many, what a chief constable described as feral ewes, that's ewes running wild all over estates in this country, causing mayhem. And if one would look in their backgrounds, most of them would be found to be from broken homes. So they've got a chip on their shoulder. They're at war with authority and with the world. They feel unloved, unwanted, insecure, and they're undisciplined, not having been taught right from wrong, but not only not having been taught, but very often in their lives they've seen the way their fathers and mothers behave, if they've seen their father at all. I mean, I myself know of some instances where a new dad, virtually every week, appeared on the scene. And in fact, this young boy had seen his mother misbehaving with these men and was threatening to blackmail her. This then commandment is given to emphasize again the importance placed upon family relationships. Husband-wife, the man, the husband, is to love his wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for the church. Give honor to her as the weaker vessel, not necessarily weaker mentally, but physically, maybe, well, stronger mentally, but physically. And wives are to obey their husbands in the Lord. And family breakup is caused by one or the other not fulfilling their duties, usually both. But here the commandment is to do with children and parents' relationship. And so in Ephesians 6:1 it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. Then goes on to say, ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So there the Apostle Paul is equating honoring our parents with obedience, and of course there he's addressing children. But as I've already pointed out, even when we cease to be children, we don't have to obey our parents once we're living separate lives, but we do have to honor them in cherishing them, looking after their needs, seeing they're all right, helping them out when they grow frail, and so on. Now, there's two things here. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. And fathers, provoke them not to anger, but bring them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. So in the first instance, there is that onus upon parents to bring up their children aright. Now the traditional family was, the man worked to provide for his wife and children, and the woman stayed at home to bring up the children, look after them, look after the household. In fact, Paul, in writing to Timothy, speaks in regard to this, that he willed that the younger women should marry. 1 Timothy 5:14, I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, reproachedly. So, as every parent knows, that when we bring children into the world, they have a fallen nature and a rebellious nature from the word go. It does not take long for this to manifest itself. And discipline has to be exercised pretty early on in that child's life. It may just require a stern word, even though they may not understand exactly what you're saying. They know by the tone of the voice you're not pleased. Or if they even come to, when there's tantrums and lashing out, a gentle tap is required. The sooner that parents teach their children that they must obey, the easier it will be then for the children as they grow up to obey their parents, to submit to them. If parents neglect their duty in this, then as the children grow older and have not been disciplined, they will find it more and more difficult to obey and be in submission to their parents. The same thing is manifest in the animal kingdom. If we train dogs or horses, for instance, then it is best that we start as young as possible. For if either dogs or horses get past a certain age, they cannot be trained. And the saying that you can't teach an old dog new tricks has a great deal of truth in it. If they've never been taught any tricks or any obedience, then it will be virtually impossible to teach them, and the same with horses, to train them if they get beyond a certain age. And this is the same with children. Often when I'm preaching in the open air, I say to parents going past, all you have to do to bring up a delinquent and a criminal is nothing. Just let the children have their own way, so that their fallen, sinful nature will not be curbed, and they will then grow up believing that they can get their own way in everything, and woe betide anybody who seeks to prevent them doing so. So before we get on to children obeying and honoring their parents, we need to remind and have reminded parents of their responsibilities of bringing up children in the proper manner in the first instance. As it says in Ephesians 6 again, fathers, not to provoke his children to wrath, but bring them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And Proverbs, of course, has a number of verses to speaking about this. A child is given too much foolishness, and the rod of correction driveth it far from him. And another verse it says, we're not to spare for the child's crying, because they do know how to turn on the tears to get our sympathies. But the sooner we teach right from wrong and discipline, the better, and the less we will have to use the rod of correction. So therefore, if children are not taught to honor their parents, are not taught to obey their parents, then it is rather unfair to expect them to do so, because they have a fallen, sinful nature like ourselves, which is in rebellion against God's authority. And as parents, rule in the home in the place of God, we could say in loco theos, then the same rebellion will manifest itself. So if we as parents do not do our duty, then it will spell trouble for relationships with children, and that we won't have to wait too long to see it being manifested. So to honor our parents in the first instance is to obey our parents, and Ephesians 6 points out in the Lord. In the Lord. Because if we don't have that exception there, parents could well tell their children to do something that's ungodly, and it may be that a child will get converted and their parents are unconverted, and therefore their parents may tell them to do something that's unbiblical and ungodly, and the child, because if they're truly a Christian, will feel obliged to disobey them. But of course, if they truly are Christian, then they would do it in a humble and contrite fashion. So just as we are to obey God, so children are to obey their parents. Of course, God never commands us to do anything that's unbiblical, and neither should we command our children to do anything unbiblical likewise. But everything that is right and proper from a Christian perspective, which we tell our children to do, they must do so. They must obey. And as parents, it is our duty to see to it that they obey. How often have I seen parents telling their children to do thus and so, and if they don't, there will be repercussions? But you see, children can read their parents like a book, and they know that their threatening very often is hot air. And so often have I seen the child just go ahead and do as it pleases, despite the threatenings. So here you have parents who do know right from wrong, who do teach the children, or at least tell the children, that they must do what's right, but don't enforce it. The children pick up on this very quickly, and they just ignore the parents. And if they're allowed to get away with it, then they will ignore them for the rest of their days, and they will have little respect for them. They certainly will not honor them, because they're not honoring them right now as children. And if they don't honor them as children, they're very unlikely to honor them when they come to age, have any respect for them, or have any concern for them. Now, in Exodus, in chapter 21, verse 17, it says this: he that curseth his father and his mother shall be surely put to death. I'll read that again. And he that curseth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. The fact that the death penalty was visited upon disobedient children, to the effect that they were cursing them, And I have in my hearing heard children call their parents fearful names and fearful language. Mind you, I've heard parents call their children in a similar fashion. Well, in Old Testament times, it would have been the death penalty. And in another portion of Scripture, it talks about children, well, now young adults, refusing to obey their parents would be brought to the elders of the city and would be stoned. So that tells us the seriousness with which God views the disobedience of children to their parents. There's a very good reason for this, of course, for it will not just be limited to disobeying their parents. It will be disobedience as far as all lawful authority is concerned. We hear of horrendous things happening in schools. Even children as young as 5 and 6 headbutting, teachers breaking their noses, kicking them, cursing them, fighting with other children. In this country, several hundreds, if not thousands, of children in primary school have been expelled for violence. In addition, many children are coming to school hardly able to speak, not potty trained, don't know how to dress, because their wretched parents haven't brought them up, they've dragged them up. So quite obviously, if a child is not taught right from wrong and made to do what's right in the home, then when they go on to school, they will carry on where they left off at home. Now, because there is no proper discipline in schools in many instances, then they get away with it, they're expelled, call it exclusion now, put in special classes, and they grow up ill-mannered, ill-educated, ill-tempered, and they are just fodder for jails and criminality. But it begins in the home. Now, I do know that parents can bring up their children as best they can, and they still turn out badly. But that's not the parents' fault. But more often than not, it is the parents' fault. And so that, when it comes then to obedience, if the parents are at fault, then we cannot really expect the children to obey their parents. If they are not taught right from wrong, and if they are not taught to do what's right and not do what's wrong. So here, while the onus is put upon the children to obey the parents, it presupposes that the parents bring up their children aright. And if they don't, then there's more blame attached to the parents than to the child concerned. Now, if we get it wrong at family level, then of course that will have its effect and is having its effect in society at large. The widespread lawlessness in society is down to the lawlessness in families. And very often, there is no proper family unit. There is no dad to be found. For men of that sort have their fun, so to speak, take off, don't discharge the responsibilities, go to someone else, father more children, and so it goes on. And the state picks up the tab for all of this. the result is breakdown in family, breakdown in society. And I have no doubt, and I pointed this out before, that the left-wing communists see this as a way of bringing lawlessness into society, making it more easy to take over. For it is not by any accident that it is left-wingers who most virulently support living in sin, same-sex marriages, sodomite rights, etc., etc. There's a man that I know who was once a communist and now a fine Christian who told me that as a communist he supported all these things, and they were very keen for women to go out to work, mothers to go out to work, in order that the children would be taken out from their mother's influence as soon as possible and put under the influence of the state. Another person I know was telling me about a book written by the former chief of the secret police of Stalin, Beria, in which he advocated polluting the West with pornography in order to bring about the breakdown of family life, disorder in society, making it much easier for the communists to take over. So it is significant that it's the left wing who are generally anti-God, the secularists, communists, who are supporting these family lifestyles in order to bring about widespread disobedience. But they themselves are wise enough to know in their own country that this wouldn't work, and therefore they were careful that such pornography was not available in their own countries, for they knew the damage it would do. But what has this got to do, you might say, with honoring children, honoring their parents? Well, as I pointed out, it's everything to do with it. For if parents do not honor their children, then children will not honor their parents. If parents do not do their duty under God, they're going to bring up little monsters who will become great monsters, contributing to the general lawlessness and mayhem in society which is now so prevalent. Now there's one other thing I want to lay before you, because as ever there are those who would seek to wriggle out of their responsibilities in honoring their parents. The incident I'm going to deal with is not young children, but older children or descendants who, under a religious pretense, were seeking to wriggle out of their responsibilities. And the Lord Jesus Christ tackled the Pharisees and the scribes over this. For here were those who were meticulous, supposedly, in keeping the law, but it was always outward. The Pharisee religion is strict outward observance, but inward depravity. Keeping the law in the letter, but not in the spirit. And he, when challenged as to why he didn't observe the transgression of the elders, challenged them in Matthew 15 and 3, but he answered and said unto them, why do you also transgress the commandments of God by your tradition? For God commanded, saying, Honor thy father and mother, and he that curseth father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, Whosoever shall say to his father or his mother, It is a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, and honor not his father or his mother, he shall be free. Thus have ye made the commandment of God of none effect by your tradition. Ye hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, This people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. So he turned it right back upon their own heads. For what they were doing, instead of supporting their fathers and mothers, they themselves now being grown up, they, under the pretense of giving a gift to the temple, were saying, well, that now means we have discharged our responsibility to our fathers and our mothers. Instead of giving them the means to support themselves, as is here evident, they were giving that support as a gift. It doesn't say to the temple, but that's what's inferred, because that's where the gifts were given. And it says, then they said, and don't honor his father and mother, well, they're free from the commandment, that is. So they'd made the commandment of God of none effect by their tradition. So people can use religious excuses and other excuses for not honoring their parents. Now I know it does become difficult for those who are missionaries. It must be very hard to have to leave these shores, go on the mission field, and leave their parents behind, especially then as they get elderly and infirm. But the Lord, of course, said in his word, in another address, that if we love our parents before him, we're not worthy to be his disciples. In other words, if we put them before a work he has called us to do, we're not worthy to be his disciple. Now, I wouldn't want or like to be in that situation, but all I can say is this: if the Lord calls us to a work which meant that we could not look after our parents and honor them, then I'm sure he would provide the means for them to be looked after. He's no man's debtor. He would be concerned for them, their parents, as he would be for those who call. So, while I would not like to be in that dilemma, nevertheless, we ought to obey God in this and trust in him that he would undertake in those circumstances. Then we have the situation of which the Lord spoke about, of asking people, commanding people, or exhorting people to follow him. And one said, first let me go and bury my father. And he said, well, let the dead bury their dead. At first sight, that might seem quite a hard saying. But reading between the lines, of course, the father wasn't at that moment dying. It might have been many years ahead. And God, Christ was calling him now to follow him. So here he was prevaricating, he was delaying, procrastinating. And this can happen, you see. We can use this commandment as an excuse for not doing the will of God. It may even be, of course, that if our parents are not Christian, and we are involved in something controversial, like campaigning against the evils of this day and generation, whereby we might get some notoriety, be in danger even, our parents might try to dissuade us. And if they had any knowledge of the Bible, they might even use this commandment to dissuade us. But that just doesn't apply to non-Christians. And today, it could well apply to Christians who are compromised. After all, the great bulk of God's people are afraid to put their head above the parapet in these days. Not only will they not put their head above themselves, but they dissuade and discourage those who are willing to do so. Now, while I, to my knowledge, have no examples of this happening with Christian parents, I've no doubt that it will be. It has done. Oh, you don't need to be so extreme. You don't need to go along with that crowd. God doesn't require you to do that. You know, and what, you know, you need to think about your parents. What will the neighbors say? What will the people at the church say? That's not far-fetched. This could well happen. And so as Christians, growing up Christians, we have to be discerning in these matters. We have to lay it before the Lord. If God is calling us, then we must go. He will take care of our parents. If they, on the other hand, are seeking to dissuade us because they're afraid of losing their own respectability or even being shunned by their erstwhile friends, we would then have to say we ought to obey God rather than men. So then, in summary, this is the first commandment dealing with human relationships. It begins with the family, the most basic and, I would say, important authority organization in the world. For if we fail here, we fail everywhere. If we bring up disobedient children, rebellious children, then we will have a rebellious society. If we neglect our duty as parents, then we have a lot to answer for. Not only to God, but to our children indeed, that we fail them. It may be, of course, that we've done our best and they still rebel. We have plenty of examples in the Bible of that happening. In fact, God complained of Israel of old, how he brought them up. And they rebelled against him and departed from him. But for us who are grown up and our fathers and mothers are still alive, we should honor them. We should love them. It shouldn't be a burden. Parent-children relationships are one of the closest, if not the closest, relationship on earth. There'd be something wrong if we didn't love our fathers and mothers and respect them. And we should honor them if they are in need of material help, monetary help, physical help, just doing jobs for them, taking them out for a run, whatever it may be. The Christians, see, they get to the church. If they're not Christian, encourage them to do so. As long as our parents are alive, we should honor them. And we should love them. and we should help them. And we should remember that when we were children and ill, how they looked after us and carried us and cuddled us. So we should look after them in their infirmities. It's a lovely picture, really, of the family of God, that He brings us into the world, the spiritual world, by His Spirit. Speaking of Christ, it says He, having loved His own, He loved them on to the end. And we should love our parents and honor them in every way, on to the end, no matter how old we are, no matter how old and infirm they are. We should love them, we should cherish them, we should honor them. Now this, in finishing, this is the commandment with promise. As it says in Ephesians 6, it is the first commandment with promise. Honor thy father and mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. So again, that tells us the importance of this, that God does give a promise concerning this. Long days upon the earth. Not so sure in these days in which we live, that might be a blessing, but if we're blessed with good health, and we are Christians, then we have longer to serve the Lord in this scene of time. But again, there is that encouragement, this reward for honoring our fathers and our mothers. I wouldn't profess to understand why God has attached this reward to this particular commandment, but He has, and it's a promise, as Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6. So may God help us to keep this commandment, as with all commandments, and not to forget our aged parents if they are still alive. And if they're not, it is always nice, comforting, often tinged with sorrow, of course, to remember them when they were alive. We remember their faces. We remember their loving care and concern. Remember the chastisements too, with thankfulness. Remember how they slaved and struggled to provide for us. And I know my own mother often went without in order that we children would have enough to eat. And it is a nice feeling to think about that. Very comforting. And that's how it should be. Families are very precious. Fathers and mothers are very precious. Let us therefore honor them. And you children here today, you honor your fathers and mothers. Obey them. Do what you're told. Don't cause them trouble and hassle. Don't be whinging and reacting and rebelling, giving them heartache. Be helpful as well as obedient. And when you grow up, continue as you began. May God bless His word to our hearts. Amen.